for December 2017. It's such an honor to be with you. My name is Dan Kahn. I'm the National Field Coordinator for the Peace Alliance. And as usual, I think we have a very rich and full call for us tonight. The topic is going to be teaching peace in schools. And I'm going to quickly go over the agenda for tonight, and then I'll introduce our co-host for the night, Yelena Popovich. And she will introduce our three special guests, Renee Owen, Lucy McGregor, and J.G. LaRoquette. After we hear from each of our three guests, we'll have time for question and answer, discussion time, and then we'll go over the action sheet. And all of you on the call should have received an action sheet. Let me just verify that you can hear me because we had a technical difficulty at the beginning. So anyone who can hear me right now, please press 1 on your keypad just so I make sure that I'm not talking to myself alone. Go ahead and press 1 just to make sure that I can be heard. I'm watching for a 1. There they are, a bunch of 1s. Okay, terrific. That's reassuring. Thank you. So you all should have received in your email inbox, just about all of you anyway, should have received an action sheet and an extra handout that we're going to be looking at in about 25 minutes. So please access that if you have a chance to get into your email, either print it out or just have it on your screen for when we get to that point. After we have a little training and review of our monthly action for December, then we're going to hear a report from the Department of Peacebuilding Committee from one of our committee members, and then we want to hear shares from the field, and that's any of you folks that want to share what's going on in your corner of the world regarding peacebuilding. So before I introduce Yelena, I just want to say again how grateful I am that we share this focus and this intention together when there's so much happening in the world that can be difficult, discouraging. I think it's really precious to come together with a group of people who are willing, as a group, to look deep into the basics of what we need as a species, as a planet, and how we might bring those things into manifestation, how we can go deep into what we really need to create in terms of relationships, communication, conflict resolution, building peace, and do that work day by day, week by week, to create the world that we want. So I really want to express my gratitude to all of you for being part of that movement. And with that, I want to welcome Yelena Popovich, who is our Leadership Council lead for the cornerstone of teaching peace in schools and a peace educator in her own right and an organizer and an activist. We're lucky to have her, and I'll pass the mic over to her to introduce our first of three special guests. Welcome, Yelena.
Thank you, Dan. Can you hear me? I hope
yes,
you guys are okay, wonderful. Thank you all, and welcome to this call. It is really a pleasure and an honor to be here. And it is, like you said, a beautiful, beautiful thing. In planning for this month's call, my intention was really to invite speakers who can share multiple ways and offer multiple perspectives on how peace is being practiced and taught in schools. I wanted our callers to hear how peace is being practiced and taught in a small private community school, as well as how it is cultivated on a larger scale, serving 10,000 plus students from underserved communities. How it has been done since 1977 in the school in the Southeast, and how is it done in a large public school on the West Coast since 2012. How it requires supportive administrators and dedicated teachers whose own self-awareness and wellness practice is the foundation on which peace is being modeled, taught, and embedded within the classrooms, schools, and communities. So without further ado, I would like to introduce our first speaker and welcome Renee Owen, who is the Executive Director of the Rainbow Community School and the Executive Director of the Rainbow Institute in Asheville, North Carolina. Rainbow Community School was established in 1977 based on the belief in the child-centered education, and to this day continues to draw from the best in the current educational thinking and holistic models of child development. Rainbow is actually recognized nationally as a leader in contemplative and mindfulness education. So welcome, Renee.
Thank you. It is truly an honor to be here and to be on this call with like-minded and, as we would say at Rainbow Community School, like-hearted people. So thank you, everybody. That was a great introduction, Yelena. Thank you. Rainbow Community School, as Yelena mentioned, was established in 1977, and we were founded on a theory of love. That was the foundation for the entire school by our extraordinary founders. Our first executive director at the time was out of Harvard Graduate School of Education and founded our school on a holistic model. And as I talk, I think I have about 5 minutes. It's just the things I'm going to go over are about the structure of the school and how that relates to providing a school structure that's built around peace, the curriculum, the culture, and finally what some of the results that we've noticed. So I'll start with structure. As a leader and head of school, I'm really fascinated with structure and how important it is in an organization, and especially a learning organization. And we use a structure at Rainbow Community School where there is a lot of shared power. And it's something that I really like to stress, that overall, teaching peace is not a program that gets added on to a school. And it has to be completely embedded, and it has to be the foundation of the school, including how the school is structured. Our governance model is something that came over from the Netherlands, and it's called dynamic governance. It was originally called sociocracy. And it is a systems thinking model that still makes use of a hierarchy, because a hierarchy is efficient and very effective. But hierarchies have some issues that often work against a peaceful organization. And so that hierarchy collapses and flattens at times. And our meetings use a consent decision basis to make decisions, not consensus, which can take forever and is very inefficient. The consent process is very elegant and efficient, and I won't go into that more now. I just want to stress that it's really important to have a structure where there is shared power, and also where peaceful systems are integrated. And this, because it also gives students a lot of a voice. So that's going to bring me to curriculum. Our curriculum is, and then next I'll talk about culture, and I like to talk about the curriculum as. Sometimes I talk about as the curriculum, the external curriculum, the content of what we actually teach. The culture is also curriculum. We learn from how people act around us. But in terms of the extrinsic curriculum and what is taught, we use a holistic model that has four pillars to it: a connection to self, connection to community, connection to the natural world, and connection to the spiritual. And I'd like to explain a little bit what we mean by all of these. And although there are four different connections, they are not taught separately. They're integrated into the school day and throughout the students' lives, as well as faculty and parent lives. And connection to self, I'm hoping that Lucy will also talk a bit about, in terms of really helping students explore their inner self and developing purpose in life. Who am I? Those big questions are explored. And in our case, especially at the middle school level, teenagers are dying to explore those kinds of questions, and that needs to be a part of their school life. Their job as teenagers and preteens is to individuate. So we go deep into those types of questions, as well as exploring our inner lives through mindfulness and other exercises. Connection to community. Our learning model is very project-based and collaborative. It is not a competitive model. From the very beginning, our students learn to work with one another, learn to communicate with one another using compassionate communication. And it's interesting how it builds a collaboration that without a sense of competition other than for fun. Connection to the natural world. We serve through stewardship, where students learning to have a natural relationship with the natural world. That means being outside a lot, of course. We do a lot of exercises that connect them with the natural world so that they come to understand that when we cut down a tree, that it affects, that we're doing something to ourselves as well. And then finally, connection to the spiritual, which is probably the most interesting part of our model and something that sometimes requires more explanation. That is, we are a secular school. We are not a religious school. We know now through empirical studies what mystics in the world have known all along, which is that humans are deeply spiritual beings. And through MRI studies and neurological studies, it's a part of our biological makeup, and it's anthropologically who we are. And part of the way we explore the spiritual at our school is through something called centering. That is the first 20 to 30 minutes of the day as students come in, the lights are low in the room, and they come in and sit in a circle and do some mindfulness exercises that are not just individually based. It's not just going inside themselves or closing their eyes or exploring just their inner self as an individual, but they do an activity that's group-based every morning within that centering. So a sacred space is open, and the teacher will lead some sort of activity that might be about gratitude. It might be about a variety of topics. It might be a nature walk. It might tie in with an academic unit. But by opening that sacred space and doing a centering activity in the morning, the class develops a really intense cohesiveness. Students have the freedom to become quite vulnerable and share deeply about themselves. And by the time centering is over, there's such a sense of peace and cohesiveness in the room. Everybody's ready to focus. That hubbub and rush of getting to school is completely left behind. And the class has become like one unit, like one organism. And it lasts throughout the day. But especially after centering, the students are so ready to work together and focus. We actually have mathematics after centering. It's by far the best time of the day. So our school is preschool through eighth grade. And by the end of eighth grade, our students have centered every day of their school life for 11 years because we started age 3. And I'll talk about the results in a minute. But the behavior and the character of those middle school students is deeply affected by that centering practice that they have every day. As far as curriculum, we also have actual peace studies. When we study heroes and biographies, they tend to be people who are change makers, who have been called to work for a purpose in their life. We have a big unit in sixth grade called Peace Jam that you might be familiar with, where they study Peace Prize laureates. I'm going to move on to culture because I think I just have a minute left. And culture is incredibly important. Students learn as much how adults treat one another and how we encourage students to treat one another as they do from the actual curriculum. We use positive discipline. Teachers speak to the students with great respect. It's a non-shaming atmosphere. As I mentioned, it's very non-competitive. And values are one of the most important lessons. And I think I'm out of time, but I just want to add that the results of the school are, I just touched on what our middle schools are like. I have people walk into our middle school and they just can hardly believe they've never seen middle school students acting in such a manner. They're not afraid to be children because there's so much psychological safety in the school. They're able to truly learn. They're so motivated and engaged. because of the sense of acceptance that they have with one another. It's a real deep sense of wellness that they have because of their understanding of their self, their purpose in life, and their sense of belonging that they have. And recently we discovered a test called Lectica that came out of the Harvard Mind, Brain, and Education program. I hope I have that name right. And they, our students tested incredibly high compared to 25,000 other students across the country. This is a test that measures cohesiveness of thinking and perspective taking, epistemological development. And so we thought those tests were, those scores were incredibly validating for the work that we do and the maturity that our students end up having as a result of learning peace within their school life. I hope that made some sense. It's hard to summarize our Rainbow Community School in 5 minutes.
Thank you so much, Renee. Thank you.
Thank you.
And what I hear is that, you know, deep sense of wellness, and that kind of is a perfect segue to introduction to a next speaker, which is Lucy McGregor. She's the mindfulness consultant for the Rainbow Institute and a preschool teacher at the Rainbow Community School. Through her own practice and teaching, Lucy has developed a passion and a devotion for creating and cultivating communities of educators who, through practicing empathy and mindfulness, are developing self-awareness skills, deepening compassion, and fostering resilience and wellness. So welcome, Lucy.
Thank you, Yelena. Super great to be here with you all. Appreciate it so much, the opportunity to talk about this wonderful work that I feel so fortunate to do. So as was mentioned, I teach preschool at Rainbow Community School and also work as a mindfulness consultant for Rainbow Institute, and so I have the opportunity to support schools outside of Rainbow in cultivating the kinds of community and culture that really supports educators and students in creating these authentic and vibrant and caring communities together, really work to cultivate inner and outer peace in our world. So I wanted to touch on when visitors come to see my classroom, because we often get people through, either parents or other educators that are interested, to take a look at the work we're doing. I'm often asked the question right away of what we do to teach in the classroom, to teach kids kindness and compassion and empathy. And often I pause when that question is asked and back up a little bit, because really the most important teaching that the children receive is not actually something that we do or that we get students to do, like a skill or a technique, actually, but it's really the important teaching really is in the way of being that the teacher shows up in the classroom. So I like to think about it in a metaphor nature a little bit, and I imagine the beautiful French Broad River that runs through town here in Asheville. And on the river in the summer, there's a lot of different kinds of boaters and paddle boarders and tubers that head out on the river. And so I think about the boats and the tubes, the kayaks on the river, these lessons that we might teach students directly, the things that we might do, but how these different vessels can go down the river really depends on the characteristics of that actual river, whether there's enough water running or if the boats are going to get stuck, or if the water is really choppy and the boats are going to get tossed around, or if the water is flowing really well and the boats can just kind of coast along. So I think of the river really as being much like the teacher, and the presence of the teacher, how they show up with the students each day really impacts how lessons that the teacher might bring that are explicitly taught around mindfulness or empathy or caring or self-compassion can land with the students. But even more than the specific lessons, it's really the actual presence of the teacher just in how they show up in general in the classroom. Throughout the whole day as a human being, it has the greatest impact on the students, to, as to whether or not those lessons are explicitly taught or not, really whether the teacher, how their well-being is in the classroom, and whether they are internalizing for themselves these qualities is really the greatest teacher of all. So the teacher is really holding the space in the classroom and serving as that anchor for all those regulated and dysregulated nervous systems of the students in our classes, which is actually is a lot to carry. And so we know that the job of the teacher is really so large, it's kind of an impossible job, actually. Even at Rainbow Community School, where we're so well supported and it's so complex and it never ends. And so I like to relate a story about a teacher that I started working with a while ago, and she's wonderful. She's an assistant teacher in my class. And on the first day, she came in and worked with me. And the second day, she came back and she told me that she got off work that day at 4 and got home and went to sit on her sofa with her coat on. And she thought she was taking a little nap and woke up the next morning. It's time to go back to school again. And so when I shared this story with a group of new teachers just a couple of months ago in a workshop that I was doing on the subject, they could all really understand immediately, because the job is so vast and so tiring. But the vastness and the possibility of the work is also what it makes it so wonderful. So really the work then isn't to shrink the size of the stress that we have as teachers, but really to enlarge ourselves and create a kind of spaciousness in our inner life that can contain all the challenges that come with this work without getting overwhelmed or burned out by it. And there can be quite a bit of criticism toward teachers from ourselves or from the community even. And so this is a form of violence towards ourselves when we are critical and kind of harsh on ourselves as teachers. And so really, I believe that bringing peace to school starts with the inner life of the teacher and how we are with ourselves in a compassionate and caring way. And the difference in the classroom is really palpable when teachers are caring deeply for themselves and coming into the classroom with this kind of sense of awakeness and aliveness. And so it's essential first, I think, to start with the care of the teacher. And we do that in various ways. One of those is through the practice of mindfulness and self-compassion, just really finding a center for ourselves and a groundedness as unique individual teachers, but also as a community. So Renee mentioned we start each morning with these centering practices with the students, but we also open our faculty meetings with centering practices that might be like mindful breathing or movement or gratitude or compassion practice, and the teachers actually take turns leading the practices. And then we always have a check-in round at these meetings too, where we share what's on our minds and hearts at the moment and find it's a safe place for us to share together and hold together what's challenging for us in the classroom. And then at the end of the faculty meetings too, we have a closing practice that includes things like checking in with ourselves, offering kindness for experience, and also really importantly, I think, is forgiving anyone and anything that has been difficult in the meeting that we might have just had, and offering gratitude for what went well. So really there's this structure of creating this culture of kindness amongst the staff, and that's really the basis for them for what comes next in the classroom with the kids. So outside of Rainbow in the community, a big work that I do is to help cultivate communities of practice in other schools with other teachers and educators, administrators who want to engage in this kind of learning. And so I work with these wonderful beings who co-create with me communities to learn and practice mindfulness and compassion, empathy together, and then to go on and learn how to different ways to implement that in the classroom with students as well. So it's really based on this beautifully flowing river of how the adults are practicing acceptance and compassion and care for themselves first. That's the basis for what we then offer to the students in the class. And of course that's different from the youngest learners all the way through to the oldest students. We do that in developmentally appropriate ways. And I was trained in the mindful schools curriculum, and so I lean on that quite a bit in developing the centering lessons I create for the students in my class. And the students learn then how to facilitate these practices themselves, and so the students actually become the guides and teachers, and we know, you know, very well that that is a great way for them to really internalize the lessons. And I really want to highlight something important I think about the mindfulness practices in the classroom, and sometimes there's confusion about bringing mindfulness into the classroom, that it might be a route to create students who can just sit still for longer or pay attention or listen more or generally look and behave in a way that we as teachers want. And although these might be outcomes, actually the purpose of the work isn't to control the students, but it's really to awaken and enliven them to this inner sense, their sense of their inner life and safety and belonging, care and compassion. And so I just wanted to highlight that, because it's really not about making kids behave a certain way, but opening themselves to the richness of their inner life and the wonder of the world and connection to their peers. And I think really that's a beautiful place that peace, that true and lasting peace is cultivated from. I guess just to wrap up, I'd say that all the practices are really taken into consideration, not just the work that we do as teachers, or the work that the students are doing as they move through their life at school, but it's also who we're becoming while we're doing it. Just not just the content and the process, but really how that is changing us as individuals into hopefully more caring, compassionate, and loving beings, both students and teachers. So I think that wraps it up.
Thank you so much, Lucy. Thank you. Thank you for being that anchor, and thank you for enlarging yourself every day to be that present and peaceful embodiment in your classroom. Last but not least, I would like to welcome J.G. LaRochette. He's the founder and the executive director of Mindful Life Project, based in Richmond, California, that through research-based and culturally relevant school-based intervention programs guides students to make positive life choices both at school and in their community. Students learn to understand and navigate their feelings, emotions, thoughts, and life experiences, which enables new and wiser responses that improve attention, learning, emotional regulation, empathy, and conflict resolution. Mindful Life Project serves over 10,000 students in 21 schools located in Richmond, São Paulo, Oakland, and Rodeo, California. Welcome, J.G.
Thank you, Yelena. This is an honor and pleasure, and to hear both Renee and Lucy around the work they've been doing in their beautiful school really kind of inspires a sense of me to really understand where I've been trying to go over the last 5 years, but also as an educator before that. Mindful Life Project is a grassroots community-based organization that really is made possible through the youth and families. But basically, long story short, I couldn't agree more with Lucy and Renee around our teachers really reflecting what needs to happen in the classrooms and embodying that presence, embodying compassion so our youth can have the same. What I noticed as a classroom teacher was that if I came in with love and compassion, the students would reflect that right back at me for my 8 years of being a classroom teacher in a community that's been hit by generations of poverty and violence due to systems of oppression. And Richmond, California, filled with resilient and beautiful youth and families, has been left without resources since World War II. And the community is reeling still from that. And so when I think of my time as a classroom teacher for those 8 years, it makes me realize, like, the most important piece was peace. Really trying to create an opportunity for my youth to be in a room that they felt trust, safety, empowered, to really find their true, authentic best selves. And while that was a beautiful experience, what I started noticing far too often was that after they'd leave my classroom years later, they'd be kicked out of class or pushed away from school, joining gangs, involving themselves in activities that were unhealthy. And far too often that was really a result of them trying to find safety. Right, a result of them trying to find somewhere where they belonged. And so when I started creating the idea of Mindful Life Project, it was because I had lost my own refuge. I'd been burnt out from all the years of trying to give, and not really taking care of myself. So when I hear the whole idea of the teacher needing mindfulness, that's exactly what happened. And in 2012, after hitting a huge wall of depression and anxiety because I saw how much suffering my youth and families and the community had been going through and feeling like it was like me trying to fix an engine with a wrench, right, in a public educational system that's set up for failure, a public education system that's creating more and more stress on our teachers and our youth. The further behind you are, the harder it is for you because the more they're putting pressure on. And so I kind of lost my self-centeredness and my self-anchoring, and in that process luckily found mindfulness. And finding that peace, that refuge in myself, that ability to be present without judgment, that ability to really truly understand what was happening in my experience and being with compassion, led me to going to my third graders that year and say, hey, boys and girls, you know how much I love you and I care for you, and you know that I haven't been my full self, my best self, the last few months. So I want to share with you what this practice is that I've been using for the last few weeks. And that's truly where it started, right? Me coming into the class more present and saying, boys and girls, here we go. Let's do this thing called mindfulness. And I'll just kind of reflect a little bit just to get started on the context of there's something when I bring mindfulness in or with our amazing team, it's not something we're teaching youth. And in that first sit that I even did with the kids, it's like we already have mindfulness when we're born. We're present. We're aware. And anything after that, right, is either a positive layers of conditioning or negative, right? And so that first practice I did with my youth, it was a class that couldn't sit still or be quiet for more than 5 seconds. They grounded in a deep level for 7 minutes on their own. I stopped after 3 minutes. I rang the bell. Mindful sit is over. We focused on breath. We focused on sound. And they kept going. And that was a moment of truth, right? Okay, here we go. This is something that we need in our schools. We don't start with social emotional learning. We don't start with finding inner peace and finding peace and connections with each other. How are we going to actually able to do well academically? So that was kind of where it started. And then it was a grassroots idea. I thought, hey, let me bring it to 3 schools nearby. I leave my classroom, no budget, no business plan, no idea what really I was doing. But I knew the youth wanted it and they yearned for it. And I wanted it and other folks around me wanted it, including the families. So starting in 2012, I left the classroom and the district really wasn't fully behind it at all, and even the two of the schools that I was trying to get into were kind of a little resistant as well. There was one leader that was fully behind it, but again, it was the families and students that fully supported the idea of bringing mindfulness, social emotional learning, compassion, empathy into our schools at a deeply ingrained level. So over the last 5 years, with an amazing team, we've really built up an opportunity to bring in our two direct service programs. Mindful Community and Rise Up. Rise Up is taking a combination of youth that are dealing with primary and secondary trauma that have affected them to the level of having really tough cycles of behavior, as well as having students who are doing really well socially and academically in the same groups, so small groups, 45 minutes long throughout the school day, of 8 kids weaving in mindfulness and yoga and expressive arts and performing arts. And giving the kids who feel like they're most pushed away from the systems, they're most pushed away from resources, actually telling them, actually, we have you. We want you here closer. We want you to be in this group. This is your space to thrive. And we did that the first year. It was our pilot program. And what we noticed was we take kids in those 45-minute groups and see some magic happen. But oftentimes when we would take them back to class, the toxicity, the stress, teachers feeling overwhelmed, it created an unsafe space for the youth to go back in. So the second year, we continued that program because we knew our youth needed it, but we realized that teachers needed it too. And we knew that curriculums and professional development aren't necessarily the way that teachers can really engage at all times. So we create our direct service push-in program, Mindful Community. And in that, we come in once a week with an amazing team of dynamic community members, most of which were raised or from the communities we serve, and teach mindfulness both for students and offering it to the teacher in the room. And over the last few years, we've noticed that growing to the point where, Yelena, like you said, 10,000 students, 21 schools, and the system changes have to happen, but we see it as a grassroots affecting the middle and then hopefully getting the top to be on board as well, and we're seeing that. So we've seen our schools increase quality teaching time in their classrooms by about 22 minutes on average. We've seen suspensions, detentions, referrals drop dramatically over the last 5 years from 35 to 90% at our school sites. And we're seeing where students have opportunities to really practice with their families. So we have an app. We have a mindful hip-hop curriculum and music so kids can engage in the music, taking mainstream songs that are oftentimes full of violence and what is being sold and remixing the lyrics into our mindfulness lessons. So over the last 5 years, really when we look at creating peace in our schools, that has to be the foundation, right? If we're not peaceful in community, if we're not peaceful in ourselves, we're not going to be able to get to the academics. And especially in our systemic levels of oppression for hundreds of years in this country, we have a lot of work towards equity and social justice. So we do as much work as we can, both in advocating and looking to create the healthiest environments that students, families, and teachers can be in. And so we're excited for the first 5 years, and we're looking forward to the next five.
Thank you, JG. I cannot wait to hear about your next 5 years. And thank you for finding that refuge, finding your own refuge in this work. It's beautiful. I just want to open to any questions for any of the speakers. So, Dan, back to you.
Yes, great. Thank you. So anyone who has a question for one of the speakers, for Renee Owen or Lucy McGregor or J.G. LaRoquette, you can press 1 on your phone keypad, and I'll recognize that as your hand being raised. So again, just press 1 on your telephone keypad, and your hand will go up, and I'll call on you and unmute you. And while I'm waiting for that, I just want to give a teaser to our monthly action. I think what all of you have said about the importance of a teacher being well cared for, being healthy and balanced, that really leads beautifully right into our monthly action, which is a bill in Congress, to support a bill in Congress that would study and promote the best available methods for making that happen across the board. So I see some hands have gone up. I'll go ahead and call on Leif Stringer. Leif, your mic is open. Go ahead.
Thanks a lot. I realize there's various research out there. I'm just curious if any of the speakers on this call are doing any interesting research at all, even if it's maybe informal, but any sort of organized effort to understand the impact of their work on academic performance or on anything else.
So all the speakers have your mics open. I'll leave it to you to see who wants to speak to that first. Yeah.
Lucy, would you like to go first?
Yeah, JG, I know that you're doing a lot of impact, impact on a larger level. This is Renee Owen from Rainbow Community School, and it's I mentioned real briefly at the end a test called Lectica. The company is called Lectica. The test is DISCO test, and it's for children through adults, and it measures development. So human, epistemological development, how well we're able to process information, make a cohesive argument, understand the perspective of others, and think coherently and express that. And when our students took that test, the test makers actually called us and they were so blown away by the scores, and we're even talking about recalibrating the test. And I know that's a direct result of the type of teaching and learning that takes place at our school.
On our side over here at Mindful Life Project, we're data-driven as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And so we oftentimes are using student surveys, teacher surveys. We've been working with the Wright Institute of Psychology and trying to measure social-emotional progress or needs. We weekly are checking in with our most in-need students and checking in with teachers. And I think it's also one of those things where, yes, we can always pretty evidently say that if a person is healthier socially, emotionally, they're going to do better in academics. But it's not necessarily, like, I almost want to push back on that a little bit and say, isn't health and wellness already enough? We do see some academic improvements, but for me, even the social-emotional scoring, like if kids themselves and teachers themselves say, this feels good to me, I want to, like, try to honor that that is already enough, in my opinion.
Hey, thanks for that question, Leif. Got a lot of hands up, and I want to make a quick plug while we're here that we're probably not going to get to all the questions, but I know that Yelena has created a Facebook page for Teaching Peace in Schools where some of this conversation can continue. And also, if you have a specific question for one of the speakers that we don't get to, I'm sure Yelena would field it and pass it on. And you can reach Yelena via Yelena, that's J-E-L-E-N-A, at peacealliance.org. It's J-E-L-E-N-A at peacealliance.org. Next, I'll call on Vanessa. I don't see your entire last name, but it starts with a C-A. Oh. There you go.
Yes,
Vanessa, your mic is open.
Okay, thank you. Renee, I think, kind of mentioned what I was thinking of. I was wondering if maybe a next step in the process could be a little more like critical thinking and discernment injected into curriculum, because I feel like that needs to be a counterpart at some point to this, with the way that the education system is kind of being, I don't know what the word is, but the way that it's going. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this is Renee, and I think this critical thinking is transformative learning. So a lot of what's happening in public schools is what one would call instrumental learning, which is just sort of the lowest basic level of learning, factual learning, understanding skills. And whereas transformative learning is when we develop as human beings and we reach new levels of development, and when we gain new perspective. As adults, we gain development when we uncover a blind spot. You know, that those moments, they're usually quite humbling, of realizing, oh my God, I have been thinking about this all wrong all my life, and now I understand. You know, we become more developed human beings as our views expand. You know, first we care about ourselves, then we learn to care about others, then we learn to care beyond, you know, then we understand how what we are doing impacts somebody on the other side of the world. And that's a lot of what critical thinking is, and that's what peace education does. It expands our consciousness. It expands our critical thinking to think in larger systems and how we affect one another. And that's the big tie-in between peace education and critical thinking, human development.
Thank you. Yeah, that really will help me be able to talk about it.
Good.
Thank you, Vanessa. Sorry, I cut your mic a little bit too soon, but thank you for the question. We really have to transition into the next section of our call because we want to have a chance for action training, and we also want to have a chance to hear from folks in the field as well as an update from the DOP committee. But I just want to thank you all deeply for joining us. This call will be recorded, as all of our calls are, and everyone who's registered for this call will receive a recording link sent to them. And again, I think Yelena probably will want to say a final thanks and farewell to our guests. But guests are welcome to stay for the next sections of the call if you would like to. You can stay for the whole call if you want. And we also understand if you have pressing constraints or demands on your time. So I'll pass it over to Yelena in case you have to go so that she can say a final thanks and farewell for now.
Thank you, Dan, and I'm really honored and deeply grateful for you all being part of this call. And, you know, I know you don't see me, but I'm smiling and, you know, I have tears in my eyes just hearing you all speak. And thank you deeply for being here tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And again, you're welcome to stay with us, and if you have to go, we understand. So again, folks who have their hands up, I'm sorry we didn't get to all the questions. I'm glad this was such a lively discussion. And again, you can send questions. I'm offering Yelena's time. I'm sure she's okay with that, to Jelena at peacealliance.org. And also look for the Teaching Peace in Schools Facebook page to continue this conversation. So I'm going to put all the hands down. If you thought you had your hand raised, it's not raised anymore. And I'm going to ask for a volunteer to take a look at this action sheet with us. You should have, again, have received an email about an hour ago with this action sheet, as well as another informational document. So if you're willing to read aloud a little bit from the action sheet, just because it's nice to have some more voices from the field, press 1. This action is about a bill that's in Congress that was introduced by someone, Tim Ryan, who is a congressman from Ohio who's an active practitioner and advocate of mindfulness himself. So I'm looking for a hand raised just to read aloud a little bit. If anybody would like to just read a few sentences from the bill. If not, I might go ahead and do it just for the sake of time. And then I'll ask for someone who's willing to do a little role play of taking this action. So you can read along on this action sheet. And here's what it says. Promote the Teacher Health and Wellness Act, H.R. 2544. So again, this gets right to the heart of what some of our guests were talking about, that it really starts with the spaciousness and the inner life and the presence of our teachers. So this is a bill that would study what it takes to reduce teacher stress and increase teacher retention and well-being. It's just a powerful building block. And what this action sheet asks you to do is to take 3 simple steps to advance social and emotional intelligence and well-being among our children by supporting our teachers in figuring out what works best to have healthy, mindful, sane, and sound teachers. So I'm looking for a volunteer who's willing to role play this call to the congressional switchboard, to speak with your member of Congress or someone on their staff, and to ask for their support for this bill, H.R. 2544. There are 3 simple steps that are laid out there. If anybody is willing to be that brave adventurer, to show us all what it sounds like. And again, for the sake of time, I'm going to go ahead and ask Lori to do that, and I'll unmute you. Lori, you're my fallback volunteer. Are you there and willing?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. Great. for those who don't know, Lori is our administrative lead on our leadership council, and also has been the assistant field coordinator for years, along with me. She's my buddy, basically. So the action calls for folks to call the congressional switchboard. It's the same phone number across the board, and then ask for your House member's office by name. And if you don't know who your House member is, you can Google who is my representative and enter your zip code, and you'll find out who it is. So we'd like to start role plays with ring, ring. Go ahead, Lori, whenever you're ready.
Okay, ring, ring.
Congressional switchboard, how can I help you?
Hello, may I have the office of Congressman Don Young?
Sure, just a minute, please. Hello, Congressman Don Young's office. How can I help you?
Hello, this is Lori Draper. I'm a constituent from Seward, and I'm wondering if I might speak with a person in your office that is focused on educational issues.
Sure, that would be Jeremy. He's not in the office right now, but I can put you through to his voicemail. Would that be okay?
Yes, that'd be great. Thank you.
Okay. Hello, you've reached Jeremy's voicemail. I look forward to returning your call. Please leave a message.
Beep. Hi, Jeremy. This is Lori Draper. I'm a constituent from Seward, and I really wanted to put H.R. 2544, which is the Teacher Health and Wellness Act, on the Congressman's radar. I think this is right up his alley, being a former teacher himself. And I think he can understand and appreciate the stress that our teachers are under. So I really would appreciate a support on this bill. And if you'd be willing to call me back at 907-201-1872 or email me at blah, 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 blah to let me know that you've received this message, I would appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, Lori. So for folks who are thinking, you know, Lori did way more than you're ready to do, Lori did like an A++++ job. And you can do a lot less than that and still be effective. But I'd love to debrief with Lori. Tell me, Lori, what do you think you did well there that you would want to do again if you did the actual thing?
I was glad that I remembered to ask for the person who dealt with the educational issues. I don't always remember to do that, and I kind of just rattle off right when I get on the call, and they go, oh, let me transfer you to somebody, and then I have to say it all again. So I was glad I did that.
Mm-hmm. Can I say a few things that I noticed?
Yes.
Sure. You said you were a constituent. You told them where you were from. And you said the bill number, which is great, and also the name of the bill. And as far as like extra credit, you happen to know that your Congress member is formerly an educator. So that's, you know, a lot of people maybe haven't already done that research and might not know. So those are, you know, those are the fact that you're a constituent is really fundamental, and you left contact information. That's also really great. Folks, you can do a lot less than what Lori did. And I mean, Lori, you did awesome. That's like something to aspire to begin this relationship with the education person. You can also just talk with whoever answers the phone and say, please register my support for this bill for HR 2544. And that becomes a tick mark on a sheet that gets turned into the legislative aide or the legislation coordinator. And they're measuring how much support there is for various bills. So, that was beautiful, and folks can do a lot less and still be effective and start this ball rolling towards understanding how to make teachers more powerfully peaceful and be the transfer some of that social emotional intelligence to your students. So thank you, Lori. And I also want to bring folks' attention to the handout that was also sent to y'all on social, emotional, and academic development. So if you want some background on social and emotional learning, social, emotional, and academic learning, there's some great statistics and information there. Yelena provided that to me, and I'm happy to share it with you. And with this kind of background information, you can begin to be a trusted source to your member of Congress. If you say, I'd like to share this handout with you, or I'd like to share some of this information with you, then you're educating them about what your priorities are. And this is where we are powerful. We're pretty tight on time, so I want to see if we can transition to have a few minutes of an update on the Department of Peacebuilding from Kendra Mon. Kendra, I am told you will either give us an update or tell us, no, it's Karen's turn. Kendra, what's the story?
Okay. I'll try to make this quick because I know you're short on time. Because
Thanks.
We're going into the holiday season, where we always talk about peace on Earth, we really want to reach out to our congresspeople and talk about that, educate them a little bit more about what peace and nonviolence are. On this call, there's been a lot that you could use, but also besides those bills, there's so many things going on, like the conversation about sexual violence, about there's just so many issues. And I think we're constantly educating our members of Congress about structural violence, which was also mentioned on this call. And I want you to know, if you look up the Global Peace Index for 2017, we are now, the USA is now ranked 114 among 163 nations. We're down 11 steps from last year, and we're between Rwanda and El Salvador. So that's something that also talks about structural violence, and I think that's something you can use in your calls. or your postcards or your Christmas cards. You can send a Peace Alliance Christmas card. And we now have 37 co-sponsors. If you'd like to join any of our calls, you can email Nancy at peacealliance.org, and she can let you know about the calls that we have that you might join. Thank you.
Thank you, Kendra. Thanks for your wonderful work. Thanks for being concise and clear. And again, we appreciate everything that you all are doing. So we have just 2.5 minutes for shares from the field, and I apologize for that. Our speakers were so rich. It was good to have as much as we had of them. And we just need a little bit less for folks in the field. If there's something going on in your neck of the woods with your member of Congress, with a community effort where you live, with an event, and you want to share it, please go ahead and press 1 on your keypad, and I will happily call on you to hear what's happening around the country, at least a little bit. No hands up so far, so go ahead. There's no line, no waiting. Still no hands. We're happy to hear about what you have planned. If you have other questions, our special guests are gone, but Yelena is still with us. So if you have questions about teaching peace in schools that you would like to raise, oh, okay. Nancy, I see your hand is up. Nancy Merritt, your mic is live.
Hello. Thank you. Great report, Kendra. Thank you. I wanted to give a plug also to what the California team has been doing. We just came back from the executive board meeting with the California Democratic Party in November and paired with the young people from the Martin Luther King Jr. Freedom Center in Oakland who helped us, who tabled with us and were terrific at getting petition signatures for Department of Peace building. And another main thing we did was submit language to the platform for the party to consider for the 2018 platform. And we won't know the results of that until February. So we'll have to, when they come out with their first draft, we'll then write more recommendations on that. So thank you all. And I love this bill. We will be promoting it at the California Democratic Convention in February.
Wonderful, Nancy. Thank you so much. In the minute that we have left, I'd like to take a quick poll. We did a little bit of training, a little bit of information about this bill. You've got an action sheet that spells out a lot more and then some extra materials. A quick poll for all the folks on the call. How likely is it, do you think, that you will take this action, that you'll give a call to your member of Congress and say, I'd like to promote this bill? If you think you would do it sometime in the next 2 weeks, press 1 on your keypad just so we can get a quick sense of how many folks may be game to make this call. Just if you feel like you're willing and you may be about ready to look at the action sheet, make the call, let your member of Congress know, press 1 just so we know roughly who might be game to take this action. It could be that my internet connection is slowing down because I'm not seeing hands going up. Lori, are you seeing hands that I'm not seeing?
Yes, we have got 62% of the folks saying that they would be willing to do that. Dan?
There they are. Thank God it was my internet connection. There they are. All right. That's terrific. 62% of the folks on the call are saying that they are willing to, it might still be going up, are willing to take that action. So that's great. And the other 38%, maybe you'll think about it and come around. If you have any questions about it or want any support, more role-playing, more ideas, feel free to email me, dan@peacealliance.org. Happy to discuss it with you. Any coaching that you'd like around this, I'd be happy to do. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute everybody's mic in a minute so we can say goodnight to each other. But before I do, I just got a closing quote that I'm happy to share from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who said, "Peace is not merely a distant goal that we seek, but a means by which we arrive at that goal." So I wish all of you all well on the journey, And I think I just managed to unmute y'all. So feel free to say anything that you want and have a blessed, wonderful evening. Good night.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night,
bye.
Everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Thank you.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste.